everyone, and welcome to Minute 23 of Season 3 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1980 Bruce Willis action movie Die Hard, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Little Eddie. I keep getting it wrong. Little Eddie O'Hare, formerly of the DC TV Report and Wicked Theory podcast. I hope to get this right by the end of the week. I got two more shots after today. We'll have to wait and see. Welcome back to the show, Eddie.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great. I actually want to ask you a question first. Okay, when you know, I was connected to you via our mutual friend, you know, Palmer, Jason,
Agent Palmer. Yes,
Agent Palmer from you know, Jason from the Agent Palmer website. You know, great podcast, a lot of fun. You know, he's got some great stuff over there. People should check that out. Just a quick plug for him. But he's the one who got the two of us together. And when I first heard your name, I was shocked. Okay, because on the beginning of Planes, Trains, and Automobile at one point, so they mentioned the fact that you know, they're waiting for him, that his plane to come in to O'Hare Airport. And so I did a little bit of research. Okay, at the time. And do you know who O'Hare is named after? Eddie O'Hare.
Edward Butch O'Hare. Yes.
There you go. Are you related to him?
No. The short story is probably not.
Okay. Do you know who his father was?
His father was Al Capone's lawyer.
Yes. And he's actually the guy who snitched on Al Capone and ended up getting killed because of it. So, yeah. Okay. So you are aware of the fact that your name is quite famous.
Yes. I have flown through O'Hare Airport several times, and almost every time I walk past security, or someone sees my ID, they ask me if my nickname is Butch.
Okay. Maybe that's why you have the Lil on your name, you know, to differentiate between Butch and you. Yeah.
Well, that actually comes, that because that's Eddie is a common name in my family. My grandfather, an uncle and a cousin, there are four of us, and the joke is that I'm the little one.
Okay. Are you?
Sure, why not?
Okay, there you go. You're the youngest.
Yes, I'm the youngest, yes.
The youngest one curls.
Yeah. Well, because it was also the kind of thing at any family party, if you called out Eddie, you'd have four heads, you know, turning back at you. So it had to be, you know, it was either Grandpa Ed or Uncle Eddie, and it just turned out everyone just called me Little Eddie.
Okay, makes sense. It sounds like a Sopranos family, but we won't go there. Okay. No, that was interesting. I was just curious because it's, to me, Eddie O'Hare is not a common name. Apparently for you, it is. It's something that you've grown up with, that everyone in the family is named Eddie O'Hare. Oh, wait, are they all O'Hares?
Yes. Oh, okay. Yes, but oddly enough, everyone has different middle names, so there's no juniors.
Ah, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, that makes sense. That's fair. So, okay. So, minute 23 begins with Carl dancing down the corridor and ends with Hans looking menacingly at the various party guests. So yesterday we ended the minute with Carl walking down the corridor, you know, and then he adds a little skip to his step along the way here. He's having a lot of fun. He's, you know, again, you know, Alexander Gudinov, a professional dancer, you know, going to meet his brother Tony, who's also the actor, is a professional dancer. So, you know, Andreas Wisniewski,
something like that. Yeah, it's funny. I looked at several interviews because I wanted to see it. I couldn't find him saying his own name. I'd heard him pronounced as Wisniewski and Wisniewski.
Well, he didn't correct them, so that probably means something. You know, I keep correcting you, and your name is a simple one. You know, I don't need to try and, you know, blurt out the Polish pronunciation, you know, or German. It looks more Polish than German, but, you know, who knows?
Well, he's from Germany.
Right. He was born in Berlin. That I saw.
Yeah.
So Carl walks down the corridor and starts speaking in German. But it's funny because his German doesn't really sound very German, because he goes, "Hey, Bruder," you know, with, you know, "Hi, brother," you know, I mean, it's nice that they do this because it establishes the relationship between them, because up until now, we don't know they're brothers, besides the fact that they're both blonde-haired, blue-eyed. You know,
although I would almost say that dialogue is not even necessary, just because the attitude that Carl has here is like, all right, you've had your chance. It's time to get this party started.
Yeah.
And the way that they interact here, speaking as the oldest of three, I recognize these sibling dynamics very much.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then Tony responds in he rattles something off in German, which we don't know. That's the thing I always find annoying, that a lot of times in movies, even if you're looking at the subtitles, they don't translate what people are saying.
No, often they don't.
Well, apparently I've heard that the German that they speak here is completely incorrect. You know, that they need to constantly be corrected. You know, that in Germany, they had to dub all of the German lines into, you know, into words that people can actually understand, because apparently it's gibberish what they're saying.
Well, yeah, because Gudinov is Russian, so right. I'm sure, you know, they probably didn't as big as the budget was for this movie, they probably didn't shell out for a linguistics expert.
Probably not. Probably mm-hmm. not. And also, I mean, this isn't even in the script, because they changed it, you know, within the script, that originally the two of them together, they decided, okay, let's add in this fun little dynamic between these two brothers, you know, give them mm-hmm. a little bit of tension between the two of them. Who knows?
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, what's interesting is you don't need to, as you said, you don't need to understand what it is that he's saying, but Tony is basically saying to him more or less, stop being so impulsive, just wait 2 minutes and it'll be done. You know, that type of thing. You know, mm-hmm. and Carl just doesn't care. You know, he just pulls out a chainsaw and, you know, starts it up and gets ready to roll, you know, that type of thing. So what do you know about chainsaws?
I think I might have used them twice in my life. I don't know, but I assume you're going to tell me a cool little history about them.
Of course. So the first electric chainsaw was invented in 1926.
Okay.
And they had corded chainsaws that people would use. But obviously it works much, much better as either a gas powered type or, you know, with what they have now, you know, that it's cordless. Helps for, you know, if there's health and safety risk issues, regardless.
Oh, of course.
It doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter when you're using it or anything like that. So basically a chainsaw is a portable gasoline, electric or battery powered saw that cuts with a set of teeth attached to a rotating chain driven along a guide bar. It's used in activities such as tree felling, limbing, bucking, pruning, cutting fire breaks in wildland fire suppression, and harvesting of firewood. Chainsaws were specifically designed bar and chain combinations, have developed as tools for use in chainsaw art and chainsaw mills. Specialized chainsaws are used for cutting concrete during construction developments. Chainsaws are sometimes used for cutting ice when using in ice sculptures, you know, like in Groundhog Day. We get to see him using a little of that. But it's also used in surgery. They have types of chainsaws. You know, not Texas Chainsaw Massacre type of surgeries.
No.
They have what's known as a flexible saw, which has a fine serrated link chain that's held between two wooden handles. And that they actually have been using that since the late 1700s.
Wow.
You know, in order to try to use it in surgery.
Mm.
It's mostly used for cutting wood. That's what's mostly people are more familiar with the fact that people cut wood. The Germans actually created some very good versions of it. And after World War II, in America, they had a lot of problems during World War II because most of the chainsaws that were coming from Germany, they couldn't get in North America. So they had to start creating their own in America. And you have the company known as Outboard Marine Corporation, which is the oldest manufacturer of chainsaws in North America.
Okay.
Okay. Obviously, people, you have to have chainsaw sharpeners, not just the chainsaw.
Yes.
Right. So, even in the 21st century, the most common type of chainsaw is still the gasoline-driven ones, right?
Okay.
But now they have a lot that have lithium batteries, and those are becoming more and more popular because the cordless ones are usually smaller and are suitable for hedge trimming and tree surgery and things like that. Not for big jobs. You know, it's a
Yes.
more handy thing for people to use, in their house. So, and apparently in 2024, there are actually going to be restrictions in some states, including California, which are going to, they're having restrictions on gas-powered gardening equipment, which is going to cause a little bit of problems. So if you're in California, you might want to start thinking about getting a cordless one.
You gotta love those regulators. Anyway.
Of course, completely.
Well, I know there are certain chainsaws, and we talked about a buzzsaw a couple episodes ago, where they've actually developed a technology where the blades are sensitive enough that if it comes into contact with a softer substance than wood or metal, that it will actually automatically stop.
Right, that's what they
So,
use to like take off casts. You know, like my
yes.
son broke his leg a few years ago, and the doctor wanted to show him how to, and he said, "Give me your hand." And he put the he turned it on and put the blade on the hand, and it didn't do anything. You know, it stops. So that's really cool that it does have that. But I don't want to be the one person that doesn't work for.
Well,
Certain
even
things
if
you
that's
still stay
possible.
away from.
Wonders of technology.
Yes, completely. So at this point, we get Tony screaming back at him, basically telling him, no, 99999. And he's trying to get him to stop, but he doesn't care.
He just cuts right into that thing.
Which of the brothers do you think is supposed to be older?
I would guess Carl. But that's mainly based on size.
Right. I mean, later on, there is a point where John says, "You should have heard your little brother squeal," but again, that's just supposition on McLean's part. I don't think he knows definitively if that really is his younger brother or not.
Goodenough looks older.
Yeah, I mean, I read somewhere where it's supposed to be the opposite, but I don't really know.
Yeah, and I don't think that particularly matters.
No, it doesn't at all. But well, actually, it does, because if you think about the dynamic here between what the two of them are doing, the way that Carl is badgering his brother, that's something that an older brother would do to a younger brother, and generally not vice versa, because the
That's
younger
true.
brother would be, more concerned that his older brother is going to come and beat the crap out of him, if he does things like that. Now, I mean, Goodenough is 10 years older. But again, it still doesn't mean anything because that's the actor, not the character. So we're not really sure about that. But Carl just doesn't really care. And then we see that he has this chainsaw that's working, and he starts cutting through the pipes, and we see all the sparks coming out and stuff like that. And we see Tony then start working quicker, taking the alligator clips and trying to, trying to make the last cut before Carl gets through all of those conduits above him. He's sweating even more at this point and stuff like that. I mean, there is a little bit of a goof here, if I don't know if you noticed, but when they show him cutting into the conduits, so we see he cuts through two of them really quickly, and then they show us Tony, and we see Tony for a few seconds, and then when we come back, he's still in the same place. He hasn't gotten very far. Even though it theoretically should be a very quick, back to the Star Wars reference, if you have a lightsaber, it just goes right through. This isn't, we're not talking about the chainsaw doesn't have to do that much work to try to get through all those conduits. So, don't know. It takes him a little too much time to get through them, I guess.
Takes as
And
long.
yeah, and as Tony's working on it, you see all these things like falling on him from above, you know, little bits and pieces from the wires, I guess, inside or stuff like that. It looks like confetti a little bit.
Yeah. And what do you think Tony is scrambling to do? Like, why? Because it seems like he's trying to make sure that something happens before Carl gets all the way through.
Right. I'm wondering. As we discussed yesterday, I think his whole idea here is to try to make it that if someone calls, the phone will just ring, as opposed to if he doesn't do the work that he's trying to do, then they might get some sort of signal that the line is disconnected. That would be my explanation of it. That the idea is, okay, let people call, the phone will ring, but it's not going to get anywhere. Getting a busy signal all the time, or getting a signal saying the number you have dialed has been disconnected. You know, that.
Yeah, and you also don't want anyone in the building getting to a phone and being able to call out to the police.
Right, or to a limo driver down in the basement.
Yes.
Because everyone's very concerned about that. Mm-hmm. You know. and then we actually show Carl, you know, once again, and he looks like he's, just finishing going through all those pipes. He's got a big smile on his face. He's very satisfied for what he's been able to do, you know, and he really doesn't give a crap.
Nope. He wants to get right upstairs where the fun is.
Yeah. And then, we get a shot of John, who's looking at the phone, trying to figure out why it doesn't work anymore. And then he goes, "Argyle." And then we get a shot of our girl going, "Mac, you there? Hello?" And then once again, we get a shot of Tony and Carl. Carl is still smiling and laughing, and Tony looks at him angrily. And then Carl just basically walks away. And then we get another shot of our girl, who looks at the phone and goes, "You know the number. Use it. And just hangs it up.
And then,
Argyle
doesn't need to talk to John. He doesn't.
No, he's having enough fun with the bear.
Yeah.
his boss thinks he's on his way to Vegas. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And then the shot completely changes. We get the classical music again. We're back to, you know, the nice classical music of the party, which is
it's Beethoven, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's Beethoven's fifth, I believe, if I remember correctly. Yes. Mm-hmm. And basically, I love how the music is playing, and we get to see all of the bad guys, you know, scrunched into this elevator. You know, you have, how many bad guys do they have in the elevator? They should have 12 in the elevator. Oh, no, sorry, they should have 10 in the elevator, because you have Tony and Carl in the basement. You have Eddie at the front desk.
Yes.
And that's it. So everyone else should be there. You know, even though we don't see Theo, he should be there with them at this
point. Is it possible some of them are using the freight elevators to get the detonators up to the roof?
It is possible. Of course.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we don't see exactly how many are here, but it looks like they're pretty much scrunched in there.
Yeah, because I was going to say, like, 10 people in any elevator is a really tight squeeze. But
come on, this is not going to tell me.
It must be some elevator.
Yeah, why not? Right. I mean, I think we can see like 6 of them. I think that's what it comes down to.
Yeah. I'm looking at one wide shot. You see Hans looking forward in the foreground. There's one person next to him who's looking in the other direction. And then 1, 2. Yeah, there's 5 people and a gun in this shot. So, yeah, I'm thinking 6 people.
Yeah, there's probably 6 in here. And again, so if there's 10, that means there's 2 that are going to some. But one of the things also is Theo blocked off all of the elevators except for 1. So that would also be a little strange. Unless elevator is going to go up another flight at this point, you know, afterwards. I don't know. I mean, we don't see what happens to the elevator afterwards.
Because I'm thinking like the main elevators are different from like the freight elevators, which would have been like where the truck was.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's true. No, but they walked very far from the freight elevators, because the freight elevator doesn't go all the way up. The freight elevator just goes, you know, into it's in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I don't know. Mm. Well, we'll have to keep an eye out and look for that.
Yeah. Right. I'm thinking of something that's going to happen in a day or two. We'll talk about it when we get there.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And at this point, first of all, they're all checking their weapons. They're all, some of them are pulling weapons out of their little sports bags and stuff like that. And we can see that just about all of them have what is known as an MP5, which is a German weapon. This movie made this weapon very popular, and it's used in most movies because it's a somewhat compact automatic weapon. It's smaller than an M16. It was the MP5, which is known in German as a Machine Pistol 5. Okay, it was made by H&K, Heckler & Koch, in Germany.
Okay.
In the 1960s. Hmm. Okay, and it is currently the most widely used submachine gun in the world. There are more than 40 countries and numerous military law enforcement, intelligence, and security organizations that have that as their primary weapon. Hmm. Okay, many SWAT teams in America now use it, even though M16s are starting to come back to be used by those SWAT teams and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So the gun itself that they use here is the truth is it's not even an MP5, which is very funny. It's meant to look like an MP5. It's an HK94, which is a semi-automatic carbine rifle, and they chop down the barrels and convert them to make them look like the MP5, but they actually aren't. So interesting. I like that as a little bit of trivia about that.
Yeah, I was going to say it looks more like a rifle than a machine gun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, later on we get to see a real rifle, when Carl, gets the sniper rifle to try to get John. But, this is mostly used in many movies because of the fact that it's a small and compact type of weapon. For instance, you have the Uzi, which is also a small, compact weapon, but the Uzi and the MAC-10 jam a lot quicker than this type of thing. So I guess it's more efficient to be using it. I'm not really a gunsmith, so I only play one on TV, as they say. So don't really have an explanation as to why this happened, but that's the way it is in this movie.
Well, I will tell you one safety issue. The freeze frame I have now is at 51 seconds, and the chain of the shoulder strap that goes underneath the rifle is in a way that right now it's right in front of the muzzle. So
I hope I mean, you see that the clip is on the left hand side, but the muzzle, but it's Yeah, that's not the most efficient way to do it. But usually the strap is held on the other side of it. It's on the upper side of it, not the lower side. So just the way – and I would also say safety-wise, his gun is pretty much almost in Hans's head. That might have ended everything a lot quicker.
Mm, well, yeah, it wouldn't have killed him, but it would have deafened him for sure.
That's for sure. Completely. There's no question about that one. We see also that the elevator's on the 29th floor, and then we see it change to the 30th floor. They're definitely getting ready. And then I love the ending shot of this minute because, we see the elevator from the party itself. The doors open. Nobody is paying any attention to who's coming out of the elevator. And then you have, two of these guys slink out to the sides.
It looks like it's being shot in slow motion, but it's not. They're actually just very deliberately
trying to be quiet,
doing it so that
nobody should hear us. I love how you have Marco, move over, and then you have the guy underneath. I always forget his name, but he always reminds me of Peter Brady. I call him Peter Brady, the guy on the left.
Yes.
We'll talk more about him later on in the movie. When we have more scenes with him, but it's just really funny. And the two of them move off to the sides as we get Hans you know, coming out in the middle of them, perfectly center framed, and then looking out at everybody, and everyone's just continuing with their party. Nobody cares.
Yeah.
Who cares that there are people coming out of the elevator with machine guns?
Alan Rickman's face. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, perfect. There's so much in that face.
He's completely menacing here, but he also knows what he wants and, you know, knows what he's going to be doing.
And the smallest wry smile on his lips.
Completely. Perfect. All right. You have anything else for this minute before we get into the script?
No.
Right. Okay. So the only difference in the script is there's an extended conversation between Argyle and John. Okay. So John had said at the end of yesterday's minute, the vote's not in yet. So Argyle responds, vote's not in yet. What's that supposed to mean? What do you want? All my children? We're making progress. After I get my foot out of my mouth, we'll really be cooking. And then I can. And then it says he stops and gently taps the phone cradle. No dial tone. So he gets cut off in the middle. So then you see Argyle looking at the phone. And Argyle goes, what? Mr. Mack, you there? He turns on the music, but there is no one on the line. And then Argyle says to himself, well, call me back, John. You got the number. He hangs up and turns the volume back up. And then we get another shot in Ellis's office. McLean hangs up the original phone and then tries the other one on the desk. It, too, is dead. So that's a nice touch, which, you know, would have been nice to see. You know, that we get the idea, obviously, that the phone lines have been cut because we see it. But it would have been fun to see him, you know, try another phone at the same time to see if the, you know, if that was also cut off. And then a slight description at the end of the villains coming out of the elevator. It says Hans and the others approaching the 30th floor. As they grow closer, we hear the noise of the speakers growing louder and louder. The men cock their weapons and brace themselves as the car stops and the elevator doors open. And that's pretty much how the minute ends in the script. Yeah. Ooh. So you mentioned before about Alan Rickman as Hans Gruber. So the segment that we do every Wednesday is Hans Hump Day, where my guest will get to tell us their top five Alan Rickman performances. So what have you got for us, Eddie?
Well, I mean, you know, I think Die Hard is the obvious choice. That's, you know, so I'm gonna try to mix
it. No, well, first of all, I want you to have Die Hard on your list if you think that's what it is. This isn't an I don't want you to be excluding Die Hard. You know, that's part of what we're trying. No, that's what we're trying to show here.
Well, I would just say Alan Rickman is an incredible actor, and I would like to showcase, you know, some works that people might not be aware of.
You can showcase them, but the point is that on the final episode of this season, I'll be tallying up, you know, what everyone thinks is his best performance, and if you leave Die Hard off of that list, you know, it's not going to get its points. Even though you think if you think it should be. If you don't think it should be on the list, that's fine too. So you can do what you did the other day. Just add an honorable mention if that's what you want to do. You can still highlight one of his performances. Well, you know, just won't get any points.
Well, then fine. Then my honorable mention for this would be Eye in the Sky from 2015, which is one of Alan Rickman's final performances. Mm-hmm. Where he plays a British general, and the movie's about a British American drone operation where they're tracking terrorists in Afghanistan, and really just in the final moments of the movie, Rickman dresses down a British politician and basically tells her, you know, not to lecture soldiers about the costs of war. And just that moment, you know, I thought was a great send off for Rickman. Another one is, I guess fifth place, cause I've already said Die Hard's would be my number
one. Don't spoil it.
All right. Fifth place would be Bottle Shock from 2008. Where he plays a wine expert who goes to California in 1976 to bring California wines to Paris for a tasting contest.
Wow, I've never seen that. Sounds interesting.
Yes, yes. Yeah, that very funny. And you see a young Chris Pine is also in that movie. And it's before he played Captain Kirk. Ooh. So you kind of, yeah. next, I put down here the Harry Potter films, just, you know, as a whole, because I just kind of, I think of that as one performance. If I was going to say one film from that, it would probably be Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2, because that's really when you find out, you know, Severus Snape's real focus and the truth behind his character for the story. Second would be Dogma from 1999, directed by Kevin Smith, where he plays an angel who's the voice of God. And I think he's very clever, has some great dry wit in that. The next, I guess my number two would be Galaxy Quest. He plays Galaxy Quest, which is sort of a by Hrothgar's hammer I stab at thee. And I think he's just brilliant in that. I think he can handle comedy just as well as he does drama. Yes. And before, you know, number one, I think, you know, again, what a menacing great villain in Die Hard. And Alan Rickman, rest in peace. I hope he's up there in heaven, sitting on a beach, earning 20%.
We'll never know. Because we all thought he you know, they're going through the rubble trying to find it. You know. All right. Great. So you want to once again tell people how they can get in touch with you, Eddie?
Sure. Yeah. I'm on Twitter at Lil Eddie O'Hare. You could, you know, check out my previous work. I used to co-host the DC TV Report with Sarah Netsley, where we talked about all the television shows based on DC Comics, and the Wicked Theory podcast with Bill Sweeney. I was one of the gaggle of people on that. And I have another project that I don't really want to talk about too much now, but just I'm hoping to have it off the ground by the end of the year. So keep your eyes peeled.
Excellent. Looking forward to that. And while you're doing that, you can rate, review, and subscribe on any podcast you might be using to listen to this show. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. Or you can go to my website. So, Eddie, you feel like coming back again tomorrow and finding out what happens with you know, how they're going to break up this party?
Let's do it.
All right. Sounds good. So, until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.